Good morning, church. It is good to be with you. I thought I'd say something that occurred to me unlikely. I'm going to preach a lesson this morning on something no one needs. You say, really? No, not really. maybe there's one person in the audience that said, well, that doesn't really apply to me, but it does apply to some people. We're going to be talking about an element of love this morning. We've gone through in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, and we've talked about the qualities of love because the Corinthians weren't acting that way. But almost certainly they'd have said, oh yeah, that applies to me, until you start going down the checklist. That love is patient, love is kind, and love is not jealous. Love does not brag, and it is not arrogant. It does not act unbecomingly. Love does not seek its own. And this morning is going to be, love is not provoked. And then a following one will be, love does not take into account a wrong suffered. The reason I like preaching this lesson, there's hardly anybody in this auditorium that would ever get irritated over anything at any time for any reason, right? I know. I talk to Rocky about this. He candidly is my role model for calmness. I mean, I don't holler and break things and rant and rave and put my fist to the wall. But inside, I get a lot more cranked up than I look on the outside. And so one of the qualities that the Holy Spirit wants us to appreciate here in 1 Corinthians 13, 5, is love is not provoked. Well, one of the problems is, well, okay, good, but yeah, what does that really, really mean? In 1 Corinthians 13, 5, that word provoked, at least in the New American Standard, is actually only found two times in the Bible. It applies to a lot of things, but the word itself only occurs twice. The idea is to be irritated, to rouse to anger, to be exasperated, easily offended, easily annoyed, bothered, agitated. That's some people, right? I mean, everywhere you turn, everything's wrong. This is wrong, and that's wrong, and the temperature's wrong, and they parked too close to me outside, and I didn't like that guy walking down the sidewalk, and it was too sunny today, and yesterday was too cloudy, and it's always something for some people. If you look at, and that's what I do here for just a moment, I looked at a handful of different translations to see how did the translators translate that word to try to give us the sense of what the Holy Spirit meant. The New American Standard says, love is not provoked. I read that, but yeah, but what does that really, really mean? The King James, maybe in this case, is doing a little better job at that, is not easily provoked. Well, what do you mean by that? Interestingly, the word easily is not in that word. It's not there, and the translators put it there in order to give us a sense of what is intended at that particular spot. The New International Version and others will say not easily angered. Okay, well, that kind of helps clarify things a little bit. A New Living Translation and others says it is not irritable. And the idea is not generally, is not usually. Everybody's probably something at one time or another. But is that our characteristic? The Amplified Version in today's Living Bible will say is not touchy. Well, if you look up on the internet, they're talking about touchy-feely. Well, you know, some people are much more huggy and such as that. But that's not this idea. But you didn't sit close to me. You sat too close to me. It's always something. And maybe you've known people along that line. And so when we're talking about that love isn't provoked or easily angered, isn't generally irritable, that's talking about how their disposition is usually. So how are you generally? Generally, I'm happy and good-natured, good mood. Aren't you that way 28 hours a day, every day of the week, every month of the year? Absolutely not. There's time things I just get fried over something. I mean, I don't go ballistic or something, but I go, and the question is, how easily are we angered? How easily do we take offense? How regularly are we irritated, or maybe always, and some people you met, they're always irritated about something. If it's not this, it's that. My goodness. And so I was just looking this morning at things that irritate people, generally people don't like being interrupted, but that doesn't strike all people equally. Some, that they're calm about that, they just wait till the other person stops talking, and then they'll take up again. How about being blamed for things you didn't do or certainly didn't do wrong? Or nobody's ever had this experience. You're driving along and there's some careless driver or a dumb driver that's going too fast, too slow, or too careless. And how you know they're doing that is if they're driving faster than you, it's too fast, and slower than you, it's too slow. And it's always when you want to do the opposite kind of a thing. Or how about you're on hold, and you're being patient on hold, and it has this elevator music that is absolutely infuriating, stupid, too loud, too monotonous, too something, and you hold and hold and hold and hold, and finally, you get cut off after you've waited 45 minutes. You want to crawl through the phone line and help that digital system out. Or one of my favorite ones is the idiotic automated customer service. You know, this is XYZ company. If you want billing, press 1. If you want press B, and the thing's all filed up. You want, and it's pause it. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. If you want blah, 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 please press 1. If you want it's not saying anything. I'm irritated. And it says, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Please call again another time. I go, I didn't get through on the first time. It's absolutely infuriating. Things that cause me less distress, but when people have their shopping carts and wherever it came from, they decided it needs to be left in the middle of a parking space or 25 of them out on the divider or the lawn, or was picked up at Walmart and it ends up at Home Depot or whatever it is. Or somebody decides in the movies they're going to turn on their little phone and have a conversation or text and lighten up and are making noise. Or you go up, you're in a hurry, and you head to the express lane, and the person ahead of you has 175 items in their cart, and all kinds of things. You say, but it interested me how different things irritate different people. For some people, and this is just off internet complaints, they get irritated on escalators if the people that want to stand still don't all move to the whatever is to the right. If they're in a crosswalk and they don't want to walk single file. If they're humming out loud in public. And, a bazillion things that people get irritated about. And so this morning we're going to talk about what the word means and some things we can do about it. And so to start off, I thought you'd appreciate this graphic on anger management. Here's one puppy sitting on the head of another one and said, when angry with someone, it helps to sit down and think about the problem. Well, that's true. The dog on the bottom said, hey, that happens all the time. And they go with it. And so part of it is just not getting cranked out of our skin because things didn't happen exactly the way we thought. One other along this line, you've kind of seen this thing. Here's a golden retriever and a black lab. Teamwork, coming together is a beginning. Keeping together is progress. Working together is a success. Each one says, I got the stick. No, I got it. No, I got the stick. No, don't worry about it. I got it. No, I got a hold of it. Don't worry about it. And so sometimes as you try to work as a team, it takes some practice at it. And so it will here as a congregation, because we'll need help in all kinds of areas. I look down, and I love dogs, labs and retrievers and this and that. And so I looked down at Dennis's service dog and the dog looking up at me, and because I like him and he likes me, and he's thinking, hey, wouldn't you like to pet me? I said, yep, but I'm going to behave. And so when the dog has its service vest on, don't feed it, don't pet it, don't anything. My hand will drift out. If the dog wants to lick me, that's his choice, but I don't pet it. Why? Because what you're doing is you're helping Dennis train the dog. Think about things that I appreciate. I come in and the building is clean. Thank you for participating and helping. If you've not, now some people can't do it. Physically, it's just not going to tolerate it. If you've not, we've got some sign-up sheets out in the lobby there for Lord's Supper, for building cleaning. It just helps everybody. We'll be able to use some help, and that's the idea of teamwork on our website, on preaching and teaching Bible classes, all kinds of things we'll be able to use. And so we're a team. Nothing works flawlessly. We don't work as individuals flawlessly, but we can do a pretty good job of it. And I am so thankful for everything that you do. So here's this passage that love is not provoked. It occurs just one other time in Acts chapter 17 and in verse 16. Paul is in Athens, and he says, New American Standard, his spirit was provoked. That is greatly upset. He was distressed when he saw a city full of idols. Now, sometimes that irritates me. It bothers me. You go into a restaurant and here's, you know, some idol up there. Maybe it's Buddha or something else. Well, Paul, would you eat there if the person was an atheist? Well, yeah, but why do they have to have that there? And so the reality is Paul saw this. It irritated him. But did he blow up? Did he rant and rave every time he saw? Well, no. You can take steps that'll be perhaps helpful. One person said, one who's under the influence of love does not readily give way to anger, though there may be cause for it. And so, yeah, boy, they, you know, rang your bell, but you don't have to respond in kind. Barnes' commentary said, he is calm, serious, and patient, and subdues his feelings and restrains his temper. Just because we feel it or think it doesn't mean we have to say it or do it. And it really helps to put the best interpretation on others' actions. Sometimes people say, oh yeah, you can guess what they mean by that. Well, maybe yes, maybe no. Maybe I guess, but I'm guessing wrong. And so this is really a very personal application lesson. You say, Paul, are you telling all those folks out there? I said, well, I hope it applies to some of you. I know it applies to me. And so we can think about how it applies. Today, will I offer peace today? Will I bring a smile to someone's face? Will I say words of healing? Will I let go of my resentment and bitterness because I think so-and-so did that because of this reason or that? Will I forgive today? Will I show love today? Will I welcome others today? Will I serve others today? See, it's just part of growing in Christ, becoming what Christ was and what he wants us to be. Now, the idea of provoked, people can get provoked. In fact, anger is an inherent emotion within God himself. When we think about the things ascribed to God, like Romans chapter 1, verse 18, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness. If God didn't have that, they'd say, oh, I don't care what anybody does. It's fine. You want to do that? I don't care. And Deuteronomy 11, 17, the anger of God, the anger of the Lord your God will be kindled against you if you do these certain rebellious things. Yeah, but how come we have that? The reason is we're made in the image of God, right? And that is Genesis 1:27. That is, God is a spirit. He's not of flesh and bones, so he doesn't look like me physically. We look like him intellectually, emotionally, and spiritually. We're made in the image of God. And think about that. If God's a holy God, right? And if he has the capacity for the emotion of anger, and he's holy, anger can't be a sin. The real question for us is always going to be, how is it expressed? In Proverbs chapter 14, verse 29, says, he who is slow to anger has great understanding. Ambrose Bierce, a journalist, said, if you speak when you are angry, you'll make the best speech that you'll ever regret. And so, oh man, why did I say that? I know. And so that's true. So you just say, you know, maybe I won't say those words. Maybe I'll say words, but different words. Maybe I'll choose not to say anything at all. Proverbs 19, verse 11. A man's discretion makes him slow to anger. It's a glory to overlook a transgression. And so, you know, when people do dumb things in the road, you say, oh, how stupid. Why didn't they? Well, have you ever been caught in the wrong lane when you really wanted to be there, or going the wrong direction and need to make a U-turn, or you turn in front of somebody, and I didn't mean to do that, but I apparently have done that. And you appreciate it when people just say, you know, that's okay. And so when I do some dumb things, I try not to do it regularly, but every once in a while, I just hold up my hand or hold up one hand and pat. My fault. Because sometimes it is, sometimes it's theirs. Because Ephesians 4:26 says, be angry, yet do not sin. And do not let the sun go down on your anger. Maybe you know of individuals, they get angry, they stay angry, they're mad for weeks, they're months, they're not going to talk to that person. And he said, look, let it go. Let it go. I don't have to retaliate. I like Proverbs 8 and verse 13. To fear the Lord is to hate evil. Should I be hating anything? Well, yes, you should. There's certain things we should hate. Ecclesiastes says there's a time to love. There's a time to hate. There's a time for war, there's a time for peace, there's a time to embrace, and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to speak, and a time to be silent, a time to be born, and a time to die. And so one individual observed that there's a problem if a person doesn't have any anger at any time. One author, Dr. Siemens, who is a missionary, pastor, professor, author, he said, anger is a divinely implanted emotion. The person who cannot feel anger at evil is a person who lacks enthusiasm for good. If you cannot hate wrong, it's very questionable whether you generally love righteousness. When people are abused or mistreated or murdered or tortured, you think, oh yeah, oh yeah, wow. Well, if that doesn't mean a lot to you, then love and goodness doesn't seem like it would mean a lot either. Amos in chapter 5 and verse 15 talks about hate evil, love good, and establish justice. We're here to demonstrate a certain quality on earth. We need to be light. We need to be salt. And so it's going to have an impact on the world around us in how we act. Anger has always been a challenge. For some people here, it's more of a challenge. Some it's a less. Some most of the time are pretty mellow. Years ago, a senior executive of Standard Oil Company made a wrong decision that cost the company more than $2 million. And John D. Rockefeller was running the firm. On the day that the news leaked out, most of the executives stayed away from Rockefeller. Man, they did not want to hear from the top boss. And then finally, one individual went in to talk to him. Edward Bedford was a partner in the company. And Rockefeller says, well, I guess you heard what happened. And Bedford said, yes, I have. He said, well, I tell you what I have decided to do is that he took out a pencil and a pad of paper, and he started making notes. Not wishing to interrupt, Bedford just let Rockefeller continue for a few minutes. And so he said, "I've been thinking it over. And before I ask the man in to discuss the matter, I wanted to make some specific notes." At the top of the page, he had written, "points in favor of," and the man's name. He just took a hit for $2 million. And he said, "I wanted to make a list of the man's virtues, including a brief description of how he's helped the company make the right decision on three separate occasions that earned many more times the cost of his recent error." Think about that. If somebody had just cost you $2 million, would you say, "Man, I got something. Do you know what you did to me and my company?" And, or would you say, "Let me tell you how awesome you are. It was a mistake. And it's felt. But you're a great person. And you've earned this company much more than you've lost it." Wow. It changes the way we look at certain things. In 2 Corinthians 12 and verse 20, Paul talked to them that he was going to come to them, and he was afraid that he'd find them not as I wish, but with angry tempers, disputes, slanders, and gossip. The reality is, they straightened that up. They weren't that way, but tempers flared in Corinth. In Galatians 5 and verse 20, to churches of Galatia, he said, "Here's the works of the flesh, the wrong things. Here's the deeds, the works of the Spirit. If we're being controlled by God's Spirit through God's Word, then how about outbursts of anger? It surprises us, maybe interests us, when somebody goes ballistic out in an airport, provided they don't have weapons, in a store, but more so we feel sorry for the objects of that person's anger. We feel embarrassed because they would even do such a thing. In Ephesians 4:26, we cited earlier, "Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down." I'm not going to hold it. I'm not going to let it dictate to me what my attitude should be. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "For every minute you remain angry, you give up 60 seconds worth of peace of mind." Huh. Maybe I won't let that event or that person control my mind and take away my peace. 1 Timothy 2:8, Paul tells Timothy to tell men in the various congregations they should be lifting up holy hands without wrath. Yeah, wait a minute. It's my turn to lead prayer. What are you doing? Are you messed up or this or that? My goodness. It's not new. Overseer must not be quick-tempered. You know, he doesn't grab people and start yelling at them. James 1:19, let everyone be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. That's what God is trying to get us to do. It's trying to help us get to that next level. Be more calm, more wise, more self-controlled as an honor to Him. The reality is there's different kinds. And I'll just share, because sometimes for some people it may be one or the other, or whatever that happens to be. There's a kind of an anger called wrath. The Greek word is thumos. We get our word thermal for that and thermos bottle, such as that. And that's one thing that should be put away, Ephesians 4 and verse 31. That means that's the hot anger. That's a woo, that explosive anger, boiling up. Then, oh, well, I was just angry. Well, yeah, you were, and it was wrong. We're not to have that outburst. So here's a graphic of some gal, red-faced, jumping up and down on her laptop computer. It's more explosive than the kind we're going to mention, but maybe the kind we're about to mention is even worse. Orge, also mentioned in Ephesians 4:31, it's less sudden, less explosive, but longer lasting. I'll get even if it's the last thing I ever do. That idea of a view toward revenge. And so as we think about anger in ourselves, what about saying it's right to be angry about things we should be angry about, But rather than carry that around as a flag and let it dominate us for the rest of our lives, maybe we ought to reconsider. It happens in families. It happens in the workplace. This insight that I'm going to share with you comes from an individual more than 250 years ago. This person said, "Wives and husbands are incessantly complaining of each other." Now, I don't know, you know, did he read the newspaper? Did he do a lot of family counseling? But that was his commentary. "And there would be reason for imagining that almost every house was infested with perverseness or oppression beyond human endurance. Did we not know upon how small occasions some minds burst into lamentation and reproach?" I mean, little stuff happens. Oh, man, that's the end of the world, and how could that ever happen? And it's hardly anything. He goes on to say, "We are always willing to think that we are within the reach of happiness, and when with repeated efforts we cannot reach it, we persuade ourselves that it's undermined by an ill-paired mate. It's that person's fault. Had I not married that person, I'd have made it for sure, because I was on my way. We're going to the glory land. I'd have been so happy, but I married Mildred or Harvey or whoever the person is." He says, though, "Since if we could not find any other obstacle that is to our happiness, it would be our own fault that it was not removed." Oh, maybe it's not them. It may be me. And so it is. You know, individuals get married and everybody will have issues that will come up that needs to be dealt with. And irreconcilable differences. One person said, "I'm not irreconcilable. You're irreconcilable." So it is. Well, Lord, what if we all became servants of the Most High God? And whatever you want us to do, we'll do. We'll get our attitudes in line with what you want us to have rather than maybe what we grew up with or came to acquire. So here's a little handful of insights and maybe in how to deal with anger. One of it is focus on God rather than on ourselves. Yeah, but do you know what they did? It makes me so angry that. Psalm 37, 7 and 8. "Rest on the Lord and wait patiently for him." Because he's already got it figured out, right? It's me that doesn't have it figured out. And since it doesn't, I need to get this. Maybe I don't need to get. Maybe I'm not the problem solver. God, you're in control of everything. You know, and taking that step back that my times are in his hands. He's got that all figured out. It helps us to be a little more peaceful. Number two is to accept our own responsibility. Well, maybe I did something to help initiate that. In Proverbs 9 and verse 12, "If you are wise, you're wise for yourself." Maybe I'm the one that started it. Maybe it would help if I apologize. Yeah, but I don't want to apologize. It makes me feel bad. Well, you're the one that started it, perhaps. Or maybe I ignored or interrupted or was impatient or whatever it was. What about my part in the whole issue? It helps lower our agitation. I like to think about when somebody does something, I go, ah. I said, "Paul, you ever done anything dumb, idiotic, wrong, wish you hadn't done, would undo if you could do?" I said, "Maybe what they did on whatever thing isn't as bad as what you did on some other thing. So why are you so irritated at that?" Well, maybe I should reconsider. And then be accountable to others. In James chapter 5 and verse 16, confess your sins to one another and pray for one another. For that, I'd say, if it's something that's major, confess it and pray with somebody you have confidence in rather than, "Ooh, man, is that person irritating? Untrustworthy and everything else," but somebody that you trust, that they'll be a great confidant. They'll share your heartache and pray with you and for you and make you stronger and make you better at that. And boy, this is hard to do. Look at it from the other person's perspective. Proverbs 21, verse 2, "All the ways of a man are right, in his own sight. Oh, yeah, well, God, look, I tell you what, leaving here, since I go north, I like to go east on 38th, jump right on the on-ramp to Highway 7, get on Tide Flats Road, and there's a merging. I'm so irritated. This one guy thinks I'm wrong. I'm where I should be, and he's all agitated, trying to crowd me off. I don't know how many times I went over that road, so I said, huh, look, actually, that's my job to yield at that part. He was right, and oh my God, okay. And so it just helps us to take a step back. How would they see it? How would they think about it? Because even if they were wrong, they probably looked at themselves as being the one in the right. And it helps us to consider that, that they weren't thinking maybe so ornery as we first considered. And then sometimes there's just flawed thinking. I'm not thinking right. 2 Corinthians 13:5, where examine yourselves. So sometimes I exaggerate the problem. Man, I can't stand it anymore. Well, maybe I could stand anymore. What if I could stand another 2 minutes? Well, what if 20 minutes? Maybe a day. The reality is, we just get so agitated. And there was Elijah in 1 Kings 19, verse 10. He'd hiding out in the cave, and I alone am left. Well, Elijah, you actually weren't the last faithful Christian on earth. He said he left 7,000 in Israel that have not bowed the knee to Baal. We just think, man, everyone went along with falsehood. And that wasn't true. But Elijah was carrying a lot, and there were death threats against him. And so he felt alone, but he wasn't alone. His conclusion wasn't correct. And then sometimes we try to read minds. Yeah, I just know what that Ben is thinking there. He's looking at me unblinking. He's probably thinking. But the reality is you never know what somebody's saying. I've done that at other times. I've taken a $100 bill and laid it out. Had a $100 bill at the time and laid it out. Said, I am thinking about something right now. In fact, I can do it. I tell you what, I'll lay it out here and I'm going to write it down so you don't think I'm kidding you. And I'm going to make an offer. All you have to do is read my mind, and you think I'm kidding. I'm not. I have got a $100 bill. Don't expect to have it long, but I got it. And so it's right here. Here is a $100 bill. I'm going to lay this right up here, and I'm thinking of, I've got it. Now, what am I thinking of? Any guy in the audience can say, what am I thinking of? What's that? Lunch. I am not thinking about lunch. Oh, how silly of lunch. We're going to take just the guys. Just the guys. What am I thinking about? Frank. Dennis's dog is a great dog. You're out of luck. It's not the dog. Two more. Anything possible. Give me all the way in the back. I'm $100 bill. Well, it crossed my mind, but that's not what I got written down because I thought, somebody gets it, I'm going to lose it. This is going to be only guys. One more guy. Mickey. I hope nobody thinks it. I was confident nobody would think it. I'll tell you why. Because I was thinking of the river that runs through my hometown, Rocky River. Now, how long would it have taken you to guess that? 100 million years. I just don't. And so, but we do that with people. I just know what they're thinking. They didn't say hello to me, so they must be thinking that, or whatever the thing is. We can't read minds. 1 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 1. There's no one among men who knows the things of man except the spirit of the man that's within him. And then sometimes unrealistic expectations. In James chapter 4 and verse 3, they want to pray for certain things to spend it on their own desires. I want it my way. People will do odd things. I used to get calls at 2 o'clock in the morning. Hey, is this Harold? No, there's no Harold here. Oh, I'm sorry. Hang up. Ring, ring, ring. Hello, is this Harold? Well, I put mine on silent so I don't wake Glenda up or me up now. So I get a call this morning from Seaside, Oregon, with some guy that's worried about, and the signal's all broken up, so I can only hear a little piece. Hi, are you the preacher? Yes. Well, here, my name is... And I... And they took my son away. And finally, when I could talk to him, I said, look, I can't hear anything you're saying. And what he went on was, yeah, but you got to watch out for the Jezebel from the book of Jude. And you just can't trust them. They'll take your children away. Call this phone number and dial into this radio station and you'll learn more. I said, okay, let me write it down. Goodbye. It's just crazy. It happens. Is it okay? Yeah. They were sincere, but they had more problems than I do. And so it doesn't always have to be peaceful. It doesn't always have to be easy. It's just okay because it's all in God's hands. And then think about rehearsing what is good. You know, that you watch over your heart with all diligence, for from it flow the springs of life. Philippians 4 and in verse 8, whatsoever is good. So if you're irritated with somebody, what if we wrote down a list of the good qualities, the really neat things that you appreciate about them? And then just a few concluding thoughts. Think about this. One person said, quietness of spirit is strength of spirit. If you got a general and he's, oh goodness, I don't know what to do. What's going to happen? And what do you think you should do? What do you think we should do? You say, ooh, that guy doesn't have it very well together. Quietness of spirit is strength of spirit. I like this picture of the lion. He's out there on the savannah. He is not worried. He is not anxious. He's not switching his tail and pacing back and forth in nervousness. Isaiah 30:15, thus says the Lord, in quietness and trust shall be your strength. God, I just trust you and it's going to be okay. I don't know how it's going to work out, but I know you are going to help it work out. Psalm 131 verse 2, I have composed and quieted my soul like a weaned child against his mother. It's not a little kid, hey, I'm hungry, mom, I need some more milk. It's just okay, I'm fine. I'm fed, I'm happy, I'm at peace. And so think about this. What Jesus asked us to do in John 13:34 is to love one another as I've loved you. We've got an opportunity to grow, to exercise ourselves, and not be easily provoked. I hope it's helped you. It's really applied to me, but then everything applies. Thank you for being here this morning, and if we could pray with you or help you in any way, we would be honored to. If you say, you know, I've been putting it off, but I'm ready to be baptized. We've got water here in the baptistry, and we're ready to immerse you into Christ if you're a believer, if you're repentant, and you're willing to confess his name before men. Won't you let us know whatever your wish is as we stand and sing this invitation song.